Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, this is Tim Gatto. This is like the sixth time I've tried to do this show. Blog Talk Radio is imperfect. That's all I can say. It's the nicest thing I can say about him right now. I've been trying to get this show on the air since yesterday. Okay, since yesterday. I must have done this show six times. They can't seem to get it right. They just can't seem to get it up on the air. You know, I pay this money every month. It can't seem to get this show on the air. It's a very important show. It's got Dr. Paul Craig Roberts and Finney Cunningham. It took me a long time to arrange this show. I'm furious, okay? I'm furious. I can't tell you how angry I really am. Okay, anyway, I understand they can have some problems, but then it seems to work, and all of a sudden, now the video won't load. So I'm going to try it another time. And hopefully, I can get this thing resolved, and I can get this on the air, because it's driving me nuts. And I'm ready to give up on it, but the material is so important that people really have to understand what it is that this thing is, you know, what they're talking about. And what they're talking about is very relevant to what's going on today. It's something that's got to be brought to the forefront of people's minds. And it's got to be acted on. And it's got to be acted on by all of us. So without any further ado from me, because I'm really tired of doing this same show over and over and over again, trying to get this on the air for my listeners, that I just go ahead and get this thing rolling here. And here it is.
Okay, we're recording. This is Tim Gatto, uncut and uncensored, and I have Paul Craig Roberts, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who was an editor at the Wall Street Journal. And he was the assistant secretary of Treasury under Ronald Reagan, an outspoken critic of what's going on in the world. And I also have Finian Cunningham, who writes for Global Research, RT, Sputnik, you name it. He's been all around the place. Both of them are very intelligent people. And, you know, what I'd like to start off with is I'd like to introduce you, Dr. Roberts. Thank you for being on the show.
It's a great pleasure, Timothy. You know that.
Yeah.
I love being on with you and Finian.
It's great to have you. And Finian, thank you for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure, Tim, and it's a pleasure especially to be on with Dr. Craig Roberts.
Okay, so we got time here. This is a pre-recorded show, so if people are listening, don't bother trying to call in, because I'm going to upload this to Blog Talk Radio and try to put it on YouTube, too. So, you know, this is pre-recorded because Finian's on one side of the world and Dr. Roberts is on the other side of the world, and I'm in the middle. So we have to do it on Skype, and Skype sounds better anyway. So anyway, Let's talk first about Hillary Clinton. How the hell did this happen? Whoever wants to go first, just go first.
I'll defer to Craig. He it's more of his field of expertise. Craig, please give us a take on that.
Well, I think the emails that were leaked explain how it happened. The Democratic National Committee is corrupt. They don't represent the people and the little guy and the minorities, and they're not on the side of the workers. They are on the side of the 1%, just like the Republicans, and the Democratic National Committee went to work to make sure that Hillary got the nomination. They conducted all kinds of dirty tricks. They stole primary elections. Most likely she didn't win it. And they were just determined to have her there as the candidate. And because of that, they have really angered the real Democrats, you know, the ones who actually believed in the party, believed in the little guy, and that the government shouldn't just help the rich. And so the convention kind of blew up. There were a lot of protests, a lot of disappointments. And I think also that when Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary, that really angered his supporters. So he hasn't been able to encourage the ones who voted for him to vote for Hillary. So it looks like this whole thing is blowing up on the Democrats. And so I don't know what kind of dirty tricks they'll use against Trump. But it looks like right now that putting in a known agent of the military security complex of Wall Street, of the Israel lobby, a person who, together with a husband, has been made rich by the 1%, a person who's broken the security laws they put normal people in prison for. She doesn't even get indicted. She gets a pass. I think that it just shows that in the United States, the political process is corrupted to the point that it's not redeemable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you sound a lot like Chris Hedges. He pulled himself away from everything. I mean, this guy's a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's a very intelligent man, and he's advocating for a revolution. This is my take. I wrote an article one time, and I said discontent is cumulative. You know, you can have anger, you can have jealousy, love, whatever. All these emotions, they all come and they all go. You know what I mean? But discontent, it stays with you. If you're discontented and you get discontented, and then there's another thing that piles onto it, pretty soon the pot's going to boil over. That's discontent. And people are discontented. There's going to be some kind of repercussions from having to vote for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And they've blocked the third parties. They've made it impossible for them to get on the ballots in all 50 states. They made it impossible to get on the mainstream media. And now we got a dictatorship of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton coming. And both of them are, and let me make myself clear. This word neoliberal is killing me, okay? Because neoliberal is nothing but fascists. And Donald Trump and his neoconservative is nothing but fascists. So we got two fascist people running for president with the full force of the mainstream media. That's my take on it.
Well, Timothy, I don't think the mainstream media is at all behind Trump. They seem to hate him. They're trying to do everything they can to derail him. I don't have much expectations from Trump, except that he did say one thing which I thought was the most important thing that's ever been said in this political round, and that what he said was, we don't have any business getting into conflict with Russia. Mm-hmm. So this is a repudiation of the neoconservatives. Mm-hmm. And since I think the greatest danger the world faces because of the neoconservatives and all the tensions they have built up against Russia and all the warnings Putin keeps giving that no one hears, I think the danger of war with Russia is very high. It's much higher than it was during the Cold War. I've been warning about the prospect of nuclear war for a good while now, again just the other day, and I think Trump is the one who will not go down that path. Now, he may be a disaster in every other way, But if he can call off this tension mounting between the nuclear powers, then this would be a great achievement. You have to remember, during our lifetime, Timothy, me, you, Finian, American presidents worked to defuse the tensions between the United States and the Soviet Union. You know, John F. Kennedy worked behind the scenes with Khrushchev to resolve the Cuban Missile Crisis. You had Nixon with SALT I, Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty I. He also got in the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. You had Carter with SALT II. You had Reagan ending the Cold War with Gorbachev. But what happened once the Clintons got there? With Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama, we have raised the tensions between nuclear powers higher than they were during the worst part of the Cold War. So I see this as a reckless, irresponsible criminal act that endangers everyone. And Trump has said, we got no business doing this. We shouldn't be doing this. I'll get along with Putin. So that's what we need. So, and he's the only one who said that. All the other Republican candidates were competing with one another. Well, who could be the toughest with the Russians? Who could start a war the quickest? And you see that with Hillary. You know, Putin's the new Hitler, she says. Well, the prospects of having an American president who sees the president of Russia as the new Hitler, that the prospects there are very, very poor for survival. The Russians aren't going to give in and accept our hegemony over them. They're just not going to do it. Neither are the Chinese. But with these crazy neoconservatives pushing that, they keep pushing and pushing and pushing. All these lies about Russia invading everybody, you know, all this military exercises on Russia's border, and then this plan that Washington has to put these missiles in Poland and Romania. Now, that will be the tripping point to World War III, because Putin has made it clear he will not accept those missiles. And he keeps saying, I tell them, and they don't hear. Well, Russia can't have those missiles there because we're claiming they're ABMs, but as everybody knows, they can be instantly converted overnight secretly into nuclear strike missiles. Mm-hmm. And in which case, Russia's strategic deterrent is canceled out because those missiles can hit in Russia in a couple of minutes. So we would have him over the barrel and we could give orders to Russia. So he's not going to accept those. And if we persist in pushing those, there's going to be a war. Mm-hmm. And so when Trump says, no war for me, I don't have anything to fuss with Putin about, we'll work things out, then that's a good sign. Of course, if he gets in, he'll have a hard time not being canceled out by the military security complex. I mean, they may put them there anyhow. Just tell him they're not there. You know, how is he going to know?
But, you know, it all depends on what kind of advisors he gets. And, you know, I don't think his intellect is really high. You know, I think this guy, he's got a lot of charisma. He's got a lot of, he knows how to touch nerves. But I don't think his intellect is really high. And I think he's going to be pushed around by these neocons. And he's gonna go along to get along. And I don't trust him either. You know?
You talking about Trump?
Yeah, I'm talking about Trump.
So I don't think he can be pushed around.
I do. I think he's a novice. I think he's very.
He can be deceived. He can be deceived. Tricked.
That's what. Yeah, he can be deceived.
Yeah.
And they did it to Obama. You know, And Clinton is crazy as a bed bug. I think she's associate there. And I'm gonna go green. I'm gonna go vote for Jill Stein. But you know, that's neither here nor there. It's just a point where you're right about the United States and Russia. There's no reason for us to put missiles in Poland, and now they want to put them in South Korea. And the Russians are highly against that, too. They said, don't put those missiles in South Korea.
That would get the Chinese very angry.
Yeah, I was in missiles for 12 years. I know these surface-to-air missiles also have a surface-to-surface capability. And it doesn't take nothing to put a nuke warhead into one of these missiles. They're only the size of a 55-gallon drum. You put them right in that missile, and all of a sudden, you got nuclear surface-to-surface missiles.
Right.
I know that. Okay. So,
does Putin. He knows it, too.
Yeah, he knows it. Putin's probably the best statesman in the world right now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's my opinion. And what they're doing in Syria, Finian just wrote a piece about the United States trying to work things out. And Finian, what did you tell me just before about Kerry and Lavrov talking?
Well, just before I go into that, Tim and Craig, I mean, I think it's quite obvious that the Russian intervention has won the war in Syria. It was a covert war for regime change by the NATO powers and their Arab and Turk allies, and using crazy terrorist proxies. And the Russian intervention has really pulled the rug from under their feet and exposed the whole vile international criminal conspiracy that it was. So the war for regime change has been completely reversed thanks to Russia. And, you know, Kerry's visit there a couple of weeks ago to Moscow was being billed as a kind of a joint venture of cooperation. But Lavrov came out there a few days ago and said that the bottom line of Kerry's proposition was for Assad to be ousted. You know, Kerry was saying to the Russians, "Look, we will allegedly cooperate to defeat terrorists in Syria, but our bottom line, demand is that Assad has to go," which, you know, illustrates what the whole objective of the whole Syrian conflict has been. It's been a Western NATO conspiracy for regime change, and it was very clearly illustrated by Kerry's very, you know, tawdry sort of proposition to the Russians, you know, when he went to Moscow there a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I think so, right. I think the Russians know that.
Yeah, I think Putin is far too well informed and far too intelligent to be manipulated and messed around by Washington. Craig, I think as you and Tim said, he's the only world statesman at the minute out there.
You know, the problem that I think Putin has is that he is a diplomat, and he is trying to rely on diplomacy. But Washington doesn't use diplomacy. It uses threats and coercion. And when the Russians reply to them with diplomacy, and Washington sees it as weakness. And so at some point, the Russians are going to conclude that diplomacy is a dead end. It has no prospects. And then there's nothing but force to confront Washington's force.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's extremely dangerous that Washington doesn't respond diplomatically, doesn't acknowledge the interest of other countries, only its own, because it's going to cause the Russians to give up on diplomacy. And that's what's kept everything low key so far. The Russians don't respond to these provocations,
mm-hmm,
except politely with diplomacy. They protest. But at some point, when you see that's ineffective, leads nowhere. In fact, I think it encourages more pressure on Russia. Then you got to get me. And so Washington won't know how to handle that. So I think the Washington is driving us to war with a country that won't surrender and which we can't defeat. And the war will be nuclear, and that'll be the end of everything. So this is why I have some hope for Trump. There's none for Hillary. There's none for any of the other Republican candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's no discussion of this. It's not in the media. It wasn't in the primaries. Nobody talks about the danger of constantly assaulting a nuclear power, or now two nuclear powers, of constantly threatening them with encirclements. This is insane. This is insane behavior, and it's not even acknowledged. You would think all kinds of mainstream media would be saying, "Hey, wait a minute. This is, what are we doing this for? This is dangerous. You know, this is the, you're talking about life on Earth. Why is our hedge enemy so important if it means we may destroy the planet?" You don't get any of these discussions. You're not getting it from the professors. You're not getting, except for Stephen Coyne. Mm-hmm. Stephen Coyne raises these issues. It's not in the foreign policy community. They're not debates in the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. You just don't see any awareness or acknowledgement. And I think that's what Putin means when he says, "I keep telling them, but they don't hear." And the frustrations of giving explicit warnings and the warnings not being heard.
And he said it. He said it.
Right. He said
it. He said it in an interview.
Right.
They're not listening. They don't hear me.
Right.
And the thing is why don't we hear him? We don't hear him because we have a military-industrial complex which has operations in all 50 states that control all the congressmen, control all the senators. They have the defense industry is 54% of our discretionary budget, and this is what drives our country, is making arms and selling arms and having an army and putting people to work and building missiles and all this crap. And it's all about money.
I agree with you, Tim. I think that's right. But I think the military security complex doesn't want war. They want an enemy.
They want an enemy, and they don't. They have the hubris to think that there's not going to be a war because Putin's going to back down. But if you look at Russian history, Russia has never backed down, except that one time when they backed down, so they overthrew the Tsar. But, you know, they don't back down, and you can't, you're right, you can't defeat them. You can't send an army into Russia and defeat Russia because it's just too big and there's too many people and they fight and they can't take Afghanistan. They sure as hell can't take Russia, not militarily. And you can't fight a land war in Asia and you can't fight the Chinese militarily. You know,
so it's nuclear.
It's going to be nuclear. And if it's nuclear, everybody dies. Right. That's the end of the story. That's the end of the human race.
That's right. And this should be everywhere discussed. Instead, we have these idiots in Europe, the EU, NATO. They're all talking about, oh, the Russians are going to invade Poland at any minute. Yeah.
I read your article about that, how Washington controls the EU. It's a product of the CIA.
Yeah.
And you're right. And why don't people listen to people like you? Why don't people listen to people like Chris Hedges and Noam, no, not Noam Chomsky, he's a chill, me, and Finian, and all the people that write and tell people what's going on, and it goes right over their heads. All I care about is is things that the Democratic convention made me sick. I couldn't watch it. It was a big show. It was like a Broadway show.
Yeah.
And everybody was just waving for Hillary. Waving for what? A sociopath. Waving for a person who bombed the shit out of Libya. Waving for people who killed children. I mean, made a coup in Honduras, overthrew their government, and then wouldn't let the refugees into the United States after the country got involved in the Civil War and sent them back, you know, to die. I mean, this is Hillary Clinton, and this is the people who were waving their hands for her. Oh, she's going to break the glass ceiling. No, she's going to break the planet.
Right. But you know, the other kind of factor in their guys is the role that the mainstream media play in, you know, completely lobotomizing the public discourse on the huge dangers that Craig very and Tim very eloquently just put there. I mean, the huge dangers, the reckless, completely manic, reckless drive for war. The mainstream media are doing a huge disservice to public discourse and the public interest because, you know, they keep repeating these hollow claims that Russia is, you know, being aggressive and China as well, and South China Sea. You know, they keep repeating this. You read any of those mainstream news outlets, Reuters or the New York Times or any number of them, and they just keep repeating this hollow, baseless assertion that Russia is being aggressive, which then allows for this reckless, dangerous policy to be continued instead of being challenged in the public domain. So the media are, you know, hugely to blame for this, you know, completely reckless momentum towards war. I do agree with Craig, too, on the point that I don't think that the military-industrial complex really want a war as such, but they need an enemy, and they need a war drum, a war-mongering dynamic. Now, the danger is that dynamic could actually then, you know, ignite into an all-out war. That's the damnable thing about this. But I don't think that they're actually wanting to, you know, have a war with Russia. It's more just to keep up the, you know, the kind of military spending and the corporate kind of subsidies that are based on the military, the military industrial complex is all about. But the actual do they want a war? I don't think they do. You know, that would be just insane. But the danger is that it's the horrible, you know, condemnable thing is that's what it's driving at. That's what it could result in.
Yeah, I see the neocons want a war. That's who wants the war. It's the neocons. They want the war, and they think that nuclear wars can be won. Don't you remember when William Crystal said, "What's the good of nuclear weapons if you can't use them?"
Mm-hmm.
So they want the war. And the foreign policy community in the United States has this idea that if we keep putting enough pressure on Russia, that they'll give in or partially give in. And
Craig, let me interrupt you. What are they going to get into? What? Washington hegemony over Russia? No, it's not going to happen.
Well, they will. They may accept either Syria has to go. They may give up on Assad, or they may have to give up on the breakaway republics in the Ukraine. they may have to give away on some relations with Europe. You know, I know they're not going to give up totally, and I'm not saying they're going to give up at all, but I'm talking about what the view is in the American foreign policy community, and that view is, well, we probably can't make them submit like we have Europe, but we put enough pressure, maybe Putin will get overthrown. Look, all the Russians will be unhappy. They couldn't go to their teams couldn't go to the Olympics. They'll blame Putin. So we won't let them go to the Olympics, and that'll increase the pressure on Putin. He'll get blamed for that. And then we keep all these accusations and pressures and military this and military that, and maybe they'll make a deal and say, okay, we won't put the missiles in Poland and Romania, but you got to let Assad go. So this is what I'm not talking about. This is not my prediction of what Putin will do. This is, I'm trying to show you the frame of mind of the foreign policy community, why they believe in this pressure. They think that eventually this pressure will produce a less interference from Russia with American unilateralism. Not that they will accept unilateralism, but they'll just accept it a little bit here, a little bit there, and not just block it. So that's the hope, or that's what the expectation is in the mind of these idiots in Washington. And the danger in all this is that if the Russians perceive this as encirclement and they realize that they do have major strategic vulnerabilities, if they let this continue, for example, if those missiles actually do get there, I think the Russians will have no alternative but to strike. They simply can't take the risk. And so the absurdity, the recklessness, the criminality of Washington lies in producing that type of decision situation for the Russians. What you're supposed to do is not produce that type of decision in where the only alternative for the person or the country you put in that fix is to strike. So
you explained it very well. You know, I didn't realize, you know, you broadened my mind about what they're trying to achieve. And I think you're essentially correct. And it is crazy. It's insane. There's no reason for this. Russia isn't communist anymore. You know, even when it was, Stalin was true to his word on almost everything that he promised Roosevelt. You know, and it was the Dulles brothers that started this Cold War crap.
That's right.
Yeah. You know? And you know, this country's been being run by neocons for the last 30 years. I mean, they've been in and out of government, they in and out of the defense industries, you know, in and out of the Council of Foreign Relations, in and out of the Bilderberg Group. You know, they're all around the place. I mean, I'm talking about Kagan, I'm talking about Cheney, I'm talking about Rumsfeld, I'm talking about all these people. They've been in government, they've been out of government, they go to pharmaceutical companies, they go to military companies, they push for all this, and they've got influence, like Kissinger. Kissinger's got influence on Trump. He's got influence on Hillary Clinton. I mean, this guy...
Well, that's not altogether a bad thing, because Kissinger himself has said that what Washington is doing with regard to Russia is absurd and insane, and that it's going to produce a war. And that's not Kissinger. He is not a neocon. Kissinger is a cold warrior. When the commies were perceived as a real threat, I think the threat was always exaggerated, but there was at least some basis for thinking that, well, it could be a threat. There's no basis for thinking Russia's a threat. So, you know, Kissinger is a good friend with Putin. They recently had a meeting together. He goes every year, they talk. And Kissinger is against this neocon policy and has warned against it. But nobody's listening to him. That shows you where the power is. It's in the neocons. If Henry Kissinger doesn't get heard in Washington. So the fact, if Trump listens to him, Kissinger is going to say, you got to cool this down with Russia. That's what Kissinger is saying now. So whatever his sins in the past, and I think they're there, but they're exaggerated because you have to put everything in its context. And there was a Cold War, and Kissinger didn't invent it. And it had its own dynamics and momentum, And he was one of the guys that had to manage it. And I'm not saying he did a good job, but he certainly avoided any kind of a confrontation with Russia. But these guys in there now, they're not avoiding confrontations, they're seeking it.
You know why? You know why? Because the whole thing runs down to what the American people are hearing. And what, you know, Finney mentioned it before, and what they're hearing is fear, fear, fear.
Right.
Fear drives ratings. Fear promotes politicians. Fear divides people. Fear lets them keep control. And that's the whole thing. It's control. It's control of the American people. And now it's trying to control the world. And as long as the mainstream media keeps pushing this fear of everybody, of Putin, of terrorists, everybody who doesn't agree with Washington is a terrorist. You know, it's amazing. You know, National Defense Authorization Act, where if you side with a terrorist, and we might be siding with each other right now, and we might be deemed terrorists, the army can come and take us away. And no habeas corpus, nothing. You know, no rights, all our amendments gone. I mean, this has turned into a dictatorship. And I agree with Chris Hedges. There needs to be some kind of revolution. Whether it's, I hope it's a social political revolution, but if it's not, it's going to be a violent revolution.
Guys, can I just butt in here? I think one good thing out of Trump's popularity, and I'm not sure about the guy myself. I've got a few misgivings about some of the things he said, but I mean, I think one positive thing out of his, you know, campaign and his popularity is that to me it reflects, you know, a huge disaffection out there. And as same with Bernie Sanders' support, sort of different, you know, kind of parts of the political spectrum, parts of the political spectrum, you might say. But the one uniting thing is that I think that it reflects in both their grassroots, you know, support, a huge disaffection with the two-party conventional system. And people aren't buying into the lies and the nostrums that have been pumped out to them over decades. And, you know, like, especially, you know, in the last few years, demonizing Russia and Putin. I think people just don't buy it. It just sounds corny and absurd, and it doesn't kind of match up with reality. So I think one good thing out of why, you know, these two guys, Bernie Sanders and Trump's popularity, is that it just indicates how much of a constituency is out there that's not represented by the conventional politics. And therefore, you know, there is good grounds to believe that, you know, there is a groundswell of popular progressive politics if it could get the right kind of channel.
Yeah, I agree with you totally, Julian. That's the heartening thing. That's the encouraging thing about this presidential primary, was that the official candidates all fell away. And Trump is an outsider. And Sanders probably won the nomination. It was just stolen away from him by the Democratic National Committee. So that shows that you're correct, and I think that is the encouraging thing. Now, I think what's happened, though, is, again, it's like what Timothy calls discontent. Now the Democrats, who were behind Sanders, and they've seen what's happened, now they're discontented. Will this demoralize them or make them more determined? We don't know that. We know that the Republicans kissed off all of the Republican candidates and seized on Trump because they said, well, at least he's not one of them. We know there's no hope from any of them. Maybe there is with Trump. So it's like Timothy says, if he can get well enough advised to appoint some of the right people who won't deceive him and who will support what he wants to do, which is to cool down this thing with Russia. I think that's the only thing that's important right now.
Mm-hmm.
is to cool that down, because, you know, why are you going to worry about welfare for the poor if we all blown up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why worry about climate change if we're all dead?
Yeah, that's right. Why? There's nothing to worry about. If, I mean, we, that would change the climate if it's a nuclear war.
Yeah, nuclear war.
In a far worse and quicker sense. So I think that Finian is completely right, and we should be hopeful for the reasons he gave, that people finally said, look, we don't trust any official candidate.
And I think, Craig, that what's going to happen is if Trump gets elected, they're going to hold his feet to the fire. And if Clinton gets elected, they're going to hold her feet to the fire. If the Democrats turn around and do what they did with Barack Obama when he promised them the world and gave them nothing, if, you know, and people just refused to vote in 2012, you know, if they do that and just turn their back on him because he's got a D on, behind his name, then, you know, they deserve what they get. Yeah, because I don't think they're going to do that. I think there's a lot of discontent, especially with the young people. You know, that they're just not going to take it anymore. And that's what I'm talking about, that this discontent is bubbling over. And if Hillary gets nominated and she starts being bellicose, they're going to jump on her like you know what, you know? That's what I think.
Yeah, you mean elected.
Yeah, she gets elected. And she starts threatening people and stuff. I don't think there's going to be riots. There's going to be riots in every city in the United States. People don't hate Russia. You know, they know Russia is just another country. They don't hate them. They know what the United States is doing to them. You know, this is being reported on the mainstream media, how we're encircling them. You know, I've seen it. You know, and they know they're putting missiles in Poland. They know they're putting missiles in South Korea. Yeah, and they know what the United States is doing. And this is Obama. This is the guy who won the Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah, this guy should be in jail. He should be in jail for war crimes. So should Hillary Clinton. Mm. Yeah, so should Tony Blair. They all should be in jail for war crimes.
I agree. Finney.
But we pulled out of the ICC, so they can't be arrested in the United States. So, yeah, we didn't tell everybody that all of a sudden that we don't go with the International Criminal Commission anymore, because we pulled out of it because Cheney and Bush might have had to go to jail. But we didn't tell the American people that.
No. Finian, how do you think the Russians see the situation?
Craig, I mean, I was listening to you very carefully earlier on, and Putin's alarm was palpable at the St. Petersburg Economic Forum when he gave that briefing to the media, and he was really very, very solemn, very serious, and his tone was remarkable in indicating just how worrying and you know, anxiety causing the American the NATO policy of encircling Russia and putting in missiles into Eastern Europe. You could tell that Putin was you know, seriously discommoded by this relentless dynamic, which is really, you know, causing a huge security problem for the whole world. Craig, I don't know. I think they're probably perplexed as what they can do. You know, I'm sure they're, you know, because it was quite obvious from Putin's demeanor and his tone that he was perplexed. It wasn't as if he was kind of cool and nonchalant about it. You could tell that the guy was seriously discommoded and anxious about the insanity of this policy direction, because it is insane, as you say, and it's, what's even more troubling is that it's being driven by people who don't seem to have any, you know, really ethics or intelligent rationale. It's just a kind of a mania, a kind of a dynamic of you know, pursuit of power or full spectrum dominance, the Wolfowitz kind of idea of the world. It's very difficult to deal with people like that who are really sort of, you know, broaching levels of insanity. How do you deal with a psychopath system? It's very it's very challenging. I think you're right that the Russians have to, they know that they can't placate or pander to a bully or a psychopath. I mean, that's going to be, you know, a disaster. So you have to draw firm lines, and Syria is one of them. Ukraine is another. I'm not saying that the Russians have infiltrated Ukraine. I'm not implying that at all, but I think they have to stand very firm on NATO's encroachment into Ukraine. I mean, the NATO is conducting war games at the minute in the Ukraine near the breakaway republics. So NATO is upping the ante all the time, and the Russians know that you can't placate a bully or a psychopath. You have to stand up to them. I don't know how that will manifest in actual practical, conduct. But just to kind of recapitulate, I think the Russians are must be, obviously, I think they are like perplexed by this manic kind of irrational sort of power mania that the Washington displays. Well, the neocons anyway.
You know, do you think that Putin does not realize that the United States doesn't have a media, it has a propaganda ministry, that 90% of the American media is owned by six companies, and that the media has no independence, it speaks for whatever Washington is doing, and it speaks for the corporations, but it doesn't give the news, and it doesn't give serious discussion of serious issues, and it withholds information, withholds news. I don't think it was ever reported in the American press that the French Minister of Interior ordered the authorities in Nice to destroy all the footage of the alleged truck attack that had been captured by all of the security cameras all along the avenue. I don't think this was even mentioned in the American press. I looked for it and didn't see it. I mean, it's online, but not in the TV or New York Times, Washington Post, not in what Washington considers the media. I didn't see any reporting that the Nice authorities were ordered to destroy the evidence of what really happened.
I read that, Paul. Yeah. I read that, and I read it online.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Online, yes, online.
Yeah, most of the people I know, you know, they call cutting the cord. They don't watch mainstream news anymore. Nobody I know, even the rednecks around here in South Carolina, don't watch the mainstream news. They get it off the internet. They get it off of YouTube. They get it off of C-SPAN. They get it off of, you know, Chromecast, you know, on the TVs. They cut the cord. They're not paying $200 a month to listen to CNN and NBC, MSNBC and Fox News. They're not doing it anymore. They don't like them. They don't listen to them.
I know, but a lot of people are, Tim.
But a lot of people are because they watch sports. That's all they care about, sports and entertainment. And that's how they capture everybody, bread and circuses, you know. But there's a lot of young people. There's a lot of young people. And young people make up like 50% of the country. I mean, people that are under 35 understand and do go online. And they do understand. And this is why I'm saying that I don't think that if Hillary Clinton gets elected, that this protest, this thing that Bernie started, he didn't really start it. Occupy started it. And what I believe is the Occupy movement is going to come back, and it's going to come back bigger than ever. And it might get violent.
Yeah, we'll have to.
I saw the in the Washington Post today. Speaking of the mainstream media, and then I cited, you know, sorry to do that, but I saw there was a poll that they cited where the American public that was surveyed, the percentage point, the margin of difference between people who were happy with the you know the political establishment, the way things were going, was a huge discrepancy. I mean, something like over 40% of people were discontent or disaffected with the way things were going, the whole American political direction. I think, Tim, you know, good point you make. I mean, I think there is, a huge, reservoir of people out there who are switching off, who know that it's all a charade, and they don't buy in with the, the narratives that are being put out to them, whether it's about Russia or Syria or whatever. And I think, Craig, to get back to your point about Putin, I think the Russians are well aware of that. I mean, I think a lot of people around the world are well aware that there's a huge difference between the ordinary American people and the elite, the 1%, the oligarchs. And the oligarchs are certainly not representative of the ordinary American people's sentiments or their assessment of the situation out in the world. Or, they know that there's a huge difference, that there's like it's night and day. And I wouldn't be surprised if, that's where RT has come about as a strategic decision. I mean, to get, the Russians and the Iranians on press TV, another example, know that they have to engage in a public discourse with the people who really matter, which are the ordinary people, the vast majority of the people of countries around the world, and to somehow kind of like sideline their elites who have been distracting and diverting the good public will and the good public interest for their own interest for decades, but that there is a groundswell of the ordinary people are moving away from those false self-serving narratives, and something like a channel like RT, no doubt it's part of its objectives to try to introduce some information into the public discourse which can alter public opinion and in a very legitimate way, not in any kind of like furtive sort of like propagandist way, just to a legitimate public interest service.
Yes, this is all true. But I think what the point I'm trying to bring out is that it was once a case that print and TV media could play a leadership role. It could lead you into war. In the case of Vietnam, it could lead you out. And it had a certain authority, and that authority still hangs around in Washington because the people in the government don't worry about what we say on the internet. They're concerned about what the New York Times says, what the Washington Post says, what CNN, Fox News say. And that part of the media, the traditional part, it no longer serves as a check on the government. It doesn't expose them. You remember years ago when the leak came from the NSA that the NSA was spying on people without the warrants, bypassing the special court. And this was given to the New York Times, and they sat on it for 1 year until Bush was reelected, before they even released the story. And they told the Bush administration that they had this leak. And so the administration had 1 year to get reelected and to make ex post facto laws or presidential directives or something to justify it all, so that when it came out, it didn't have any effect. So contrast that with how the New York Times dealt with the Pentagon Papers. So what I'm saying is that part of the media that has traditionally had influence, leadership, not always exercised in any responsible way, but it could function and did from time to time as a check on the government. That doesn't happen. And the internet doesn't play that role because the government doesn't pay that attention to the internet. So, and the people who are watching the internet, you know, one's watching this, one's watching that, and this, and that. It's not like everybody reading New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or watching ABC, CBS, NBC. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the people in a way to see what everybody else must be thinking. Because if you go to global research, you don't know who their audience is or how big it is or who they are. Or, you know, it's not like, okay, I'm in New York. This is what the Times says. I mean, people everywhere sees this. All the editors of other newspapers see it. And it'll be reflected there, too. And so here you have the people, in a way, led. And it becomes a check. Well, that's what's gone with the concentration of the media in such a few hands. And it now serves as a propaganda organization. You know, Gerald Celente calls the mainstream media prostitutes.
Yep.
That's a combination of press prostitute. And I use that term, but it was Gerald who came up with that. So this is the difference, and this is why I think it's hard for the discontent to act, because there's no way to lead it. There's no way to present it as a check on the government. So we can all be right that the people are fed up and they don't want the struggle with Russia, but it's not like the media taking that position and saying, what are you doing this for? These are the dangers. Look at here. These are the dangers. In other words, there's nobody to call the government out that they're concerned about. I don't think they're concerned about global research or the Information Clearinghouse or Counterpunch or what, you see. They would be concerned if it was the New York Times, the Washington Post, or CNN. If they were holding the government accountable, then it becomes a check. And that's what I think is missing. And how do we get this leadership factor in to get this discontent able to serve as a check on the government?
You know, I'm not arguing with you, Craig. I know what you're saying is true. It's a corporate-controlled media, and they bow to the government, and they do withhold information, and we're not being told the truth. But I'm going to tell you, CNN's losing ratings, Fox is losing ratings. I mean, the listenership is going down.
I know that that's not the point, but the point is different. The point is
the government people watching it.
Well, the point is what leads to discontent when you don't have a media?
You got Democracy Now. You got RT.
Well,
you got the Young Turks. You got a whole bunch of different people that people watch and people listen to.
Well, they get information.
And information is what drives a revolution. You know, when the American Revolution happened, only 20% of the people wanted to break away from England.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about there was a time when
there was a time
media
and it's
could
gone.
Check the government,
and it's gone.
It's gone.
We don't have it anymore.
That's the whole point. That's the difference.
We don't have it anymore. Yeah. So what we have now is RT, Press TV. We got Sputnik. We got Democracy
Look,
Now.
Tim, let me make this point too. I have complained about it to RT and to Press TV. They follow the American news. Whatever the Americans say, they say it. If the Americans say that Orlando was a Muslim attack. And even though we still haven't seen the blood and the evidence and all that, and there's no security camera information released, and they say, so Press TV and RT, they say, oh, this was a terrorist attack, Muslims. They did the same thing with the attack in Nice. What RT says, they say it as a fact.
Same thing with that school shooting.
Yet if it's a fact, why don't they release the security camera films? Why do they order the films to be destroyed. So actually, I was really astonished because RT, in the same piece, reported that the Ministry of Interior had ordered the destruction of all the evidence, and then went on to say that that this story we've been fed is a fact. Well, if it's a fact, why you got to destroy the evidence? And why didn't RT see the contradiction in its own story? It's because the whole world looks to whatever Washington says, and they assume, well, if the New York Times says it, it must be true. And so what all these headlines that are manufactured here, they reappear in RT. They reappear in Press TV. They reappear in Sputnik. You know, I've told them. I said, what are you doing this for? You're supposed to be questioning these events, not accepting the story that you're handed. So you see what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, and you're correct. You're correct. And the thing is what Chris Hedges says. You know, I hate to keep bringing them up, but he's the only one that's got the balls to say what's going on. You know, he's the only one. He's the preeminent guy who's going to lead the revolution, because there's going to be a revolution, whether it's a social revolution or whether it's a political revolution or whether it's a violent revolution. People can't keep going this way. 1%, the 99% thing, it's true. It's all true. I mean, the income disparity between the rich and the poor is ridiculous. The middle class hasn't had a raise in 20 years. You know, and that we 54% of our budget goes to the military. I mean, this is stuff that everybody knows now. Everybody knows it. And everybody is angry about it. I'm angry about it. I'm 65 years old, and I'm extremely angry about it. And there's other people that are very, very, very angry about it. And nobody demonizes Russia. Even in South Carolina, they don't talk bad about
Russia.
Well,
I don't know. There's a lot of people taken in by it. I run into them constantly.
I don't run into them. Maybe because I'm secluded. You know, I'm retired. I'm gonna start a video cast. You know, I'm getting the equipment, getting somebody to help me set it up. I'm gonna start my own station, just like the Young Turks.
Well, good for you, Timothy. Maybe you'll have me and Finian on.
Yeah, I will. And you know what? I'm gonna start bringing news clips in and clips from different places. And I'm gonna start reporting the news the way it's supposed to be reported. And this is what's happening all over the country. And but the thing is you're right, and Finian's right, and I'm right. We don't have the time to have this work itself out, because they're going to kill us all if we don't stop it now.
Yeah.
And the problem is, how do we stop it now?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
This is
perplexing for us.
See, that's what Putin can't figure out. Yeah.
I know, and it's so ridiculous to see our species going like lemmings right over the hill.
You know, Finian, maybe what Putin could do is just invite the Europeans, the various leaders who are basically our puppets, just invite them to Moscow, sit them down, and say, now, here's the situation. You're helping the Americans put us in a situation that is in which our security is untenable for our security. And I've kept telling you and telling you and telling you, and no one hears. And it's very curious you don't hear, because what you're forcing me to do is to target all of your capital cities with nuclear weapons.
He brought Merkel and Hollandaise to Moscow to talk to him just about that.
Just say, you know, you're going to disappear. We can't take this at some point, and it's up to you. If you were to stop this, the Americans couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You're enabling them. You are enabling this road to Armageddon.
Yeah.
You've got to stop enabling it, or there's going to be a nuclear war. And when we won't just strike you, we'll have to strike the Americans too.
Yeah.
Maybe he should go on a news conference and say that to the whole world.
Yeah. I think no, because then the propagandists will get a hold of it and say he's crazy, he's going to destroy the world. He needs to tell the leaders, maybe individually. Maybe you should see them one at a time and just talk to them about it and say, do you realize once we are in an untenable position, or before we get to that point, we have to strike.
Yeah.
We're not going to accept that type of risk. And so why are you enabling this? Because you're on the hit list.
Because just like you said in your article, they're getting big, slow money from Washington.
I know, but if you tell them, and then if you still get no response, then you know you're going to have to strike. Mm.
It's a valid suggestion. I mean, and I hope Putin's advisors are maybe listening in or get wind of your suggestion. And I think it is a valid suggestion. It's got to be put in stark terms just how dangerous the situation is. If he hasn't communicated that already to them off the record, kind of quietly, but it is a completely untenable direction that the Washington is driving its vassals of Europe towards. And it's got to be put to them really starkly. The trouble is, Craig and Tim, these people in power in Europe, across Europe, most of them are as you put it, very clearly before, Craig, they're all in the pay of Washington and the media too. And, there's a huge credibility gap in Europe, as there is with the United States. I mean, that's why the Brexit vote came about. That's why the anti-EU parties are on the rise all across Europe. You know, the Orthodox, the establishment power people in Europe, there's just a huge credibility gap. So, they're not representing the people's interests whatsoever with regard to this conflict, this building conflict between Washington and Russia. And it's the more they do that, the more the credibility gap grows to a chasm, So it's Europe is not just a kind of a security problem, like a war danger, but it's actually leading to the complete dissolution of the European Union as we know it.
Yeah, I think that's what Putin is banking on, that the thing will break apart and then we won't be able to have the cover that we need for this type of aggression to Russia.
I agree with you. And I think it's not a furtive or illegitimate, desire by Putin. I mean, the Western media like to allege that Russia is somehow sinisterly, furtively, trying to break up Europe. Europe is doing it itself by slavishly following Washington. Now, Putin and his people, are quite, they can quite legitimately sort of analyze it like that and, to have an expectation of that. I don't think they're driving.
Well, I didn't say they were driving it. I said, I think that's what he's banking on.
The
Europeans will fall apart on their own, and that this will then stop the aggression.
I wasn't trying to say that you were insinuating that, but the Western media typically insinuates that. So when you said that, they would latch on to that as this is a game, Putin's sort of sneaky game plan. But I think it's just what you said there when you repeated it.
Yeah, well, I was talking about if he went on TV and told the world, it would look like a threat. But if he just tells the individual members, he doesn't have to threaten them. He can just point out the situation that they're putting Russia into.
Yeah.
And they need to think about this because the consequences could actually be disastrous.
I think, you know, I think you've got a good, a really good case there, Craig. The trouble is that these people won't listen to Putin, even though he would spell it out starkly and rationally and cogently. These, I don't have any faith in most of these political representatives, the leadership, the government in Europe. I think they're just too pathetically servile to Washington. They'll not listen to common sense. What really needs to happen is, as Tim was saying earlier on, there needs to be some sort of revolution where there will be a truly representative government in European capitals that will actually represent the interests of the European people, which is certainly not war with Russia.
And to get rid of NATO. What is NATO?
Yeah.
NATO has no purpose. NATO is nothing but an arm of the United States security state. You know, it's what they call full spectrum dominance. Mm-hmm. And NATO is part of it, and the Europeans are part of it. And they need to get out of it. They need to break up NATO.
And I think that's why Trump, you know, in a very refreshing way, I have to admire Trump's sort of like, you know, dismissive attitude towards NATO, like not really taking it seriously, because that's what it deserves, that kind of attitude, because it is, just as you say, Tim, a military machine to, you know, promote Washington's hegemony. So when Trump kind of dismisses it or, you know, kind of poo-poos it, it really riles up the establishment because it's such a vital part of their hegemonic, you know, power projection.
Yeah. Well, look, you guys, we've been going on a long time. I don't have anything else to say.
Okay, but, you know, you got me thinking about Trump there, Craig, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I forgot. I forgot, but as Finian pointed out just now, he's not high on NATO either.
That's a good thing.
So that's a good thing, too. So he's not high on conflict with Russia. He's not high on NATO. So that's enough to get the guy elected, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, maybe he will be. Okay, I'm going to let you guys go. We've been on the air for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
I want to thank Paul Craig Roberts, and I want to thank Finian Cunningham for coming on the show. And what I'll do is I'll upload this and podcast it, and I'll send you guys a link to it. And I want to thank you both for coming on the show from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thank you for organizing it.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks. Good for you, Tim, and my true commendation for you for getting public debate going like this. And just to say, you know, cheerio to Craig. A pleasure to talk to Craig again.
Yep. I enjoyed both of you tremendously. We'll go on. Do it again. All right. I'm signing off.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Craig. Thanks a lot, Finian.
Okay, Tim, Craig. Bye-bye. Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. That was Finian Cunningham and Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. People on the alternative media know who both of them are. That was pretty important things that they had to say. This is why 6 times I've tried to upload this. 6 times. And this is my 7th. So, okay. I'm going to leave you go. Theme song. And listen to words of it, because I mean every word of what they're saying here. This is Molotov. This is In the Red.
Those who have no need for it. Babies are starving while they're calling brand names. in their back. You wonder why I say China attack. Hell yeah, I'm a socialist. You notice by the way my words flow. This ain't no joke, and every word that I've spoken to show this. Capitalism is a blue and a green. Fuck what they want. I'm interested in what the whole world needs.
With a rhythm, with a rhythm, with a noise in your hand, with a voice when the pulse ain't no fucking more. This is the sound of it all coming down, of it all coming down. With a left, with a rhythm, with a noise in your hand, with a voice when the pulse ain't no fucking more. This is the sound of it all.